An initiative to capture how many New Zealanders actually have dementia is going door to door. The best estimate is that 70,000 New Zealanders have dementia, and that's likely to triple by 2050. The impact of dementia and equity in Aotearoa study, led by Auckland University's healthy ageing expert Professor Nari Kirse, is focusing on what's called ignored ethnic diversity. This includes Chinese, Indian and Fijian Indian communities, which are known to be underrepresented in dementia statistics. Next month, more than 50 researchers, many recruited from minority communities, will begin door knocking in Auckland and Christchurch. Professor Kirse explains the shortcomings of a Pākehā design system that is not one size fits all. Kia ora, Nairi. Welcome to 9 to Noon.
Kia ora, Catherine. Thank you for having us.
So we don't really have an accurate picture of how many people have dementia. How do we even reach an estimate, Nairi?
Well, with the estimates that we have reported in things like the National Dementia Economic Report are based on overseas studies, and we've never had a dementia prevalence study in New Zealand. It was a small one in the 1970s. So we estimate that up to half of people who have dementia are not known to their health services and are quite happily living at home with their families caring for them. They could be offered a lot more. They could be offered better services, particularly those in ethnic minority groups. So to find them, that's the question. So there's a very well-established epidemiological survey technique called door knocking. So you choose statistically representative areas and then you knock on every door, find out who's behind the door, and then offer the interview, an in-depth interview, to see whether people have problems with their brain health.
How many people do you need to get in order to have a representative sample of a community, Nairi?
Well, that's the $6 million question. So we estimate that if we had about between $600 and $700 people in the different ethnic groups that we're interested in, that would give us a reasonably precise estimate. The vast majority of those people will have normal, good brain health, and we need to have that many to discover the estimated about 10% of people who may be having difficulties.
Why is there such an undercount in the system? I mean, obviously it can take time for dementia symptoms to be elevated to the point where there's some kind of medical diagnosis or at least suspicion. But does the system itself keep very poor records? We've got rest homes, for example. We've got GPs. Are we not good at keeping records?
Well, it's not so much the records as the stigma. People don't like to come forward even to their GP to admit that they have problems with their memory. Their families often, particularly in certain ethnic groups, really protect and cherish their older people and don't want them to be exposed to the stigma either. Our records, when people come forward to the system, are reasonable, but it is quite tricky to make a really accurate diagnosis of dementia. GPs can do it. We have memory services throughout the country, but actually people have to come forward and ask about it. So we're front-footing that and going to the population.
And assess. And when you visit people to try and assess this, is there a fairly standardised test that will indicate at least the possibility of dementia? How will you door-to-door know?
Yeah, that's a really good question. There is a famous man, Martin Prince, who is an old-age psychiatrist in the UK, who developed a process where a series of questions could be asked in a standardised way by trained lay people. And he took this 1066, it's called the 1066 diagnostic interview, took that to several low and middle income countries to establish the prevalence of dementia in those countries. We've taken that method and adapted it and translated it and revalidated it for our New Zealand population. Over the last 5 years, we've had feasibility studies in several ethnic groups, and that has been successful, showed that the test is accurate. The interview is relatively short, takes about 45 minutes to an hour. It's very important to get information also from a care partner or a loved one support person to give that reflection on the cognitive health of the older person.
how will it happen? And we'll bring in our guests in a moment who are leading in their communities for this work.
Yeah.
How will it happen, though? Because to knock on the door and say, can I sit and talk to you for 45 minutes or an hour, and is there someone here who can be with you? Do you have a two-step process, or how does it actually happen, yeah. Nairi?
That's a really good question. So in the feasibility study, it was a two-step process, but we need to forewarn people. And that's partly what this is about, Catherine, actually, that this is a really important project and we really want people to answer the door. So we warn them. So there is a flyer in the mailbox a month before and again the week before with the names of the interviewers on it. The interviewers wear actually lovely T-shirts and they take their University of Auckland IDs so people know who they are so it can build a wee bit of trust. Build rapport on the doorstep. How are you? There is a brief screening test. But, of course, many doors will not have older people living behind them. And so that's the first stage, is to find the households with older people and then offer a brief screen, and then most of those people will be offered the opportunity to interview. Of course, it is not mandatory. It is a choice, and the choice to participate in this will help New Zealand very much and will help the communities that these people live in.
I suspect there will be a reasonably high decline rate, though, because there isn't just about anything, and so you have to have a big enough, you have to keep knocking on the doors till you reach your numbers, right?
I have to say, Catherine, at the feasibility study, we had a 75% agreement at the door.
That's extraordinary. Yeah.
Well, older people are very, very keen on doing good things for their communities, and we really appreciate that.
Thank you, Nairi. Stay with us. Nairi Kirse, who is with the University of Auckland's Healthy Ageing. She's the Healthy Ageing expert. Let's welcome two others involved in the project now. We thank them very much for coming in. They're the leads for the Chinese and Indian parts of the project. And they both say there's a lack of understanding of dementia often among their community and also stigma and embarrassment around cognitive impairment. So let's welcome AUT Professor Rita Krishnamurti, who specialises in dementia epidemiology and is the lead researcher for the Fijian and Indian part of the study. So kia ora and welcome, Rita.
Kia ora, Catherine.
With us too is Associate Professor Gary Chung, who's an old age psychiatrist based at the University of Auckland, and he's the lead for the Chinese part of the project. Kia ora, Gary. Great to have you with us too.
Kia ora, Catherine.
So can we speak to each of you perhaps about your respective roles? Rita, could you elaborate on some of the barriers that you're dealing with when it comes to the underreporting of dementia and the way the system undercounts, but also just the challenges sometimes within communities?
Thank you, Catherine. So, yes, so in the lead-up study to this IDEA program that we're running now, we had a chance to interview people, we had a chance to go into the communities, the Indian communities, and I originally hail from Fiji, which is why we have the Fiji and Indian group here as well. The dialect that's spoken is a little bit different to the Hindi that's spoken in India. So we have both groups. What we said is some of the things you've already mentioned are lack of awareness around dementia, a lack of recognizing that dementia is an actual condition and it's not part of normal aging. So when we interviewed people, most people thought it was part of normal aging. So they didn't seek help. They didn't go to their GP. There is also stigma around dementia. It's not very much talked about in the communities. And people also have barriers around language. If they don't speak English or they don't speak English well enough, or they don't have an advocate in their family to speak for them, they don't often access services. So those were some of the barriers that we came across when we talked to people in the community.
So just explain again how this will happen. You will be getting underway after Easter, I think, for perhaps 3 to 4 weeks.
Yes. So at the moment, we are busy training more than 50 research assistants who are going to go out into the community. And many of them are people who are who speak Hindi, Fijian Hindi, Mandarin and Cantonese. And so all of the information that we need to ask has been translated. Not just translated word for word for language, but also culture-specific as well, so that we are asking those questions in an appropriate way We're also doing training around kind of the etiquette around being with older people in the community, the Indian community and the Chinese community. So, and the flyers that we're distributing have been translated into the different languages in very simple words so that when people see that in their mailbox. The other thing we're doing is we're doing a lot of community engagement. So we're talking to community leaders, senior citizens groups. We're going to advertise on our community radios, newspapers, etc., so that there is a bit of a build-up of awareness around the study that it's coming, so that when people see us at the door, they're not they're more trusting because they've heard about us through their leaders, through their channels, etc.
What are your fears for people who are going undiagnosed?
There is the fear for that person not receiving the care and the understanding that they should be getting. There is also the fear for the carers of that person. So I am someone who, relates to that because I started my whole journey on this research because my father had dementia, and this was going back 10, 11 years ago. We were told quite casually that he had dementia. When he had dementia, he was in his 80s, and there was no follow-up. There was no explanation of what we were going to expect for the next 1.5 years. And I remember feeling the shock of how quickly he declined from knowing who we were and being fairly normal to completely forgetting who I was. And it was very traumatic. It was very emotionally traumatic for me and my family. And we were not actually given enough information about where to go for, services or help or support. So I kind of then realized that there might be lots of people out there who don't have advocates, who don't have people to tell them where to go for help. So that was one of my main fears, and that's one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about this study.
So you've no doubt that a door-knocking initiative like this that was then paired with follow-up information would have made a huge difference to your family.
It would have made a difference, would have kind of connected us with the right people to know what to do, where to go, what to expect.
Yeah. Thank you. Stay with us, Rita. Gary, as I said, Associate Professor, Old Age Psychiatrist based at the University of Auckland and lead for the Chinese part of the project. Gary, is it your belief that Asian New Zealanders, Asian communities are underrepresented in dementia stats?
Yes, and I think my colleagues already talked about the stigma attached with the diagnosis of dementia. So often talking to other colleagues, whether they are in hospital services or primary care, they just say we're not seeing the expected number of Asians in their services. Yesterday we were at the Alzheimer's New Zealand one-day meeting, and one of the GPs say they have 75% of their population or capture area are Asian, mainly Chinese and Korean, but they don't see them presenting with dementia. So, yes.
And is there a high connection with the health mainstream health services, like a GP's service? Is there a high connection? Is that a factor that there's not a high enough connection, or is it more people just not coming forward when they think something might be wrong?
I think it's both. Access to services, particularly services appropriate for Asians. There is a lack of those services in New Zealand. And I've worked in the dementia sector for 20 years now. And depending where you live, we have this postcode lottery with different services in different parts of the country. So a good example is in Counties Manukau, there's a memory service, which is well run for the last, I think, about 10 years now. But that's probably one of the very few across the country. And also, there is no one health service owns dementia. So dementia can be seen by specialists like myself, an old-age psychiatrist, can be seen by a geriatrician, or if a younger person, they may present and see a neurologist. So unlike conditions like diabetes, there is a diabetic service in the hospital. We haven't got a dementia service as such in most parts of New Zealand. So even for Pākehā, it's difficult to negotiate those services. And imagine English is not your second, it's not your first language, let's make it, that journey even harder.
Does this mean also, therefore, that when it comes to the likes of respite services or other services, they're not available, potentially, they're not available in accessible ways for many cultures because the demand, forgive the use of the word, is so misunderstood or not understood?
That's right. So in Auckland, we're a bit lucky. We have several Chinese-run aged residential cares, and they can provide long-term care as well as respite care. I visited a patient a couple of weeks ago, and she's looked after by a Chinese patient, and she's looked after by her daughter. And she told me, yes, they tried the respite care in the Chinese-run rest home. Also, some community agency have Chinese staff, so actually quite exceptional. I was interested to find out a bit more from the daughter. They have a Chinese carer coming in every day to walk with my patient to the local park. But that's exceptional, yes, we need more of those services. Yeah.
And therefore, you need to know what the need is. Could you tell us a little more about who is going to be doing the door knocking? Some of the people who volunteered, who are Mandarin speakers or Cantonese speakers, and are being trained to go and do this, Gary. How have you found them, and were people keen to help?
Well, we're good, well connected with the community. So the first step was advertising these positions. And for the Chinese community, we have over 30 people applied, and they are from different backgrounds. So some of them may have health background, some are university students, different age groups as well. We have people in their 20s, we have people in their 60s, and we interview all of them as the first step, and we selected the best to go forward for the training, and a similar process for the Indian research assistant as well. So they have extensive training by our lovely research coordinator, Sharon. And like this morning, Rita's going to do some training at the medical school, and I'm going to do some this afternoon.
Thank you, Gary. Speak to Nairi Kirst, who is the impact of dementia and equity in Aotearoa study leader. She's at Auckland University. Nairi, even some of the questions that are typically asked don't take into account different cultural backgrounds, do they, in the initial questions? And there's really been thought put into, for example, some of the historical questions. Where were you when, or whatever?
Yes, I think it's very interesting. During the feasibility stage, we were adapting the methods. And say the question of who was the US president who was, this is one of the memory common ones, killed in the 1960s, that's absolutely irrelevant to many communities. And so for the Māori adaptation, it became who was the woman from Northland who led the Māori land march? Most all Māori communities would know that. Mm. And for Chinese, it was a different question completely. So that adaptation to the ethnic specific questions is very, very important. And we did go through the 1066 also for the Pākehā interviews because there were some adaptations needed for the New Zealand context. So I'm relatively confident that what we're doing is will be acceptable to the people behind the doors.
What happens after the door knocking stage? What happens with the information? You've got to run your statistical analyses over it and be confident you've got that representative sample, but will it quite likely affect what official data is?
Well, there's several lots of things we will do with the data, of course. To provide the precise prevalence estimate, we're also going to project that through our ageing demographic so we know what to expect in 5 years and 10 years as there are increasing numbers of people in the over 80s age group. And we will also think about, work out the costs related to dementia, because we know family caregivers give up work, have health issues, have lots of extra costs related to looking after a person with dementia. That's not really well understood. So that information will be very important, particularly in the different ethnic groups and how they do things differently. There will be a qualitative aspect to the study where we will understand what success looks like for people with dementia. And there will be, I'm just getting a glass of water given to me.
I know, it's when you start projecting. It happens to me every morning.
Yes, that's right.
Carry on.
So I was talking about, what was I up to? I was talking about the caregivers. Yes, so the caregivers. So what is success? And then that information, that qualitative information with the information about costs and everything will go forward, and we will co-create with the different communities what would success look like? What are the solutions to the barriers that are coming up? And that information will be fed directly into our policymakers and our health system. So we have members of the director of the Health of Older People's Planning will be on some of our groups. There will be the local representatives from the Alzheimer's. All the sector groups will get together with their ethnic-specific people to help this co-creation. And we think that will help. Yes, it will help Pākehā, but it will help Chinese and Indian enormously as well.
Wonderful. So this gets underway, I think, from around April 8th in Auckland and in Christchurch. Thank you all. Nairi Kirst there. Thanks also to our other guests, Rita Krishnamurti and Professor Gary Chong. Professor Krishnamurti and Associate Professor Gary Chong.